Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 8th of November 2014. Of course, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next hour as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Busy program. A huge day in the world of college football. And, you know, we've had a lot of complaints about college football over the years with the lack of a playoff system, voters, you know, Associated Press polls and things of that nature. But when it comes to regular seasons or the importance of regular seasons or the interest of regular seasons, I don't think anything compares to college football. I mean, the NFL is on its own level. You understand that. The NFL is just, I don't even compare anything to the NFL because it's the NFL. But even the NFL, and we'll talk about it later on the program, even the NFL can have a weekend where the games are like this weekend. College football, I mean, you remember a couple of Saturdays ago, I think it was the 4th, about a month ago, where you had all these matchups of these top teams, and it was like week 5, week 4, week 5, week 6. Here we stand now in week 11, and you have 7 matchups that six of that you have to watch. Really 8 matchups that are games that are going to be, you know, involving top 15 teams, 6 of them you have to watch. I mean, at Utah is an elimination game. Alabama at LSU is an elimination game. Kansas State at TCU is an elimination game. Notre Dame at Arizona State is an elimination game. Ohio State at Michigan State is an elimination game. No other sport do you get that. None. Not the baseball, not even pro football, for that matter. As, you know, we hear NBA coaches and players, you know, whine and complain about how long the regular season is. You know, college basketball has this month of March. NBA really doesn't, the regular season doesn't matter until March. Let's be honest. But again, college football, say what you want about it, no regular season compares. And tonight, is going to be one of those days that you're probably going to be talking about for a long time, considering what happens. I mean, a couple of these games are going to be classics. You know, LSU's playing great football right now. You know, Alabama controls his own destiny. You know, how real is Notre Dame? They're going to get tested. And even when you get past this weekend, you still have Alabama, Mississippi State. You still have Alabama, Auburn. Notre Dame, USC. You know, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. So a big, big day of college football and night as well. Looking forward to it as we hit the stretch run. December 7th, of course, the day that everybody's waiting for as far as the four playoff teams, the four playoff teams being selected. State, Florida State, Auburn, Alabama, I mean, Auburn, Oregon, Alabama, of course, all control their own destinies as far as I'm concerned. But again, if you're in the SEC, it's like a minefield if you're in the SEC. I mean, it's going to be, you know, the question is, can they get a team, can they get a playoff team? Will they get two teams, or can they get a team with two losses? Those are the two big questions as far as the SEC goes in terms of the college playoff system. 347-215-6180. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we come back, another issue for NASCAR. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Roz and Ross will join us about a little bit after 11, talk some NBA, NBA, NFL, as, again, we had to head into the stretch run of also the NFL season as well. Kurt Busch being investigated for a alleged domestic assault from of an ex-girlfriend in Delaware. You know, NASCAR has had a rough year. I mean, between them fighting each other, seeming like every other week, you had the Brad Keselowski and Jeff Gordon fight, the tragedy with the Tony Stewart, you know, with the Tony Stewart situation. I mean, it's been, you know, for as popular and for a sport that basically goes not unnoticed, but if you're somebody who is into football, is into the four major sports, you're really not that big of a NASCAR fan for the most part. And anybody can call up and correct me if I'm wrong. NASCAR has their own fan base. I feel like NASCAR has a cult following in a particular area of the country, which is, you know, North Carolina, Tennessee, the South. So when things go right, it doesn't get the attention that it probably deserves. And when things go wrong, it doesn't probably get the attention that it deserves. But again, it's been a rough year for NASCAR. It doesn't shock me that Kurt Busch, you know, allegedly, you know, beat up his ex-girlfriend. No, Kurt Busch is a human being just like, just like Ray Rice is a human being, just like an NBA player is a human being. These guys are all humans. They're all human beings outside of what they do athletically. So you take them for what they are, human, you know, regular people as far as personalities and things of that nature. But again, this year for NASCAR is a year to forget. It's a year to forget, and there's a couple things they need to do to clean up their sport. again, they, you know, domestic, so they can implement some rules and stuff like that. But as far as just the fighting amongst the drivers is getting to a, is getting cartoonish, like the WWE. It's ridiculous. Week in and week out, yeah, guys fighting. If this was the NBA, you'd be ready to ban the league. I mean, seriously. It'll be interesting to see how NASCAR handles this in wake of what's been going on with the NFL, in terms of the Ray Rice situation, Ray McDonald, Greg Hardy, those type situations. Right now, you know, America can turn on you quick when these type of situations happen. It'd be very interesting to see how the fans, how true, you know, how true NASCAR fans react to this. Does this turn them off to the sport? Does Kurt Busch start losing sponsors? We'll see what happens, because NASCAR is all about the sponsors. I mean, you lose one sponsor, I mean, you could be finished as a driver. I mean, that's what, you know, that's, it is a sport that is driven by the sponsors. So again, NASCAR has a lot of issues that needs to needs to clean up. A couple of late NBA scores. Phoenix, and we'll talk more about the NBA in depth, but Phoenix, Sacramento, great game, double overtime. Sacramento improving to 5-1. They're 3-0 on the road. DeMarcus Cousins is playing out of his mind right now. And Charlotte gets a win over Atlanta in overtime. Born ready, Lance Stephenson has his moment, hits a game winning three. He had been struggling first part of the season, but hits a game winning three to win the game at home. So you see Charlotte gets a nice win at home, and you see Sacramento get a great win on the road against a very good Phoenix team. A couple of late NBA scores. We'll get into more, get into the NBA more in depth along with Roz and Ross. Very interesting 2 weeks, first 2 weeks of the NBA of the NBA season. When we return on this list, this is another Circle Review. We'll have talk about the Redskin report that's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Circle Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Circle Review. Redskin report. Redskins right now are just, you know, I'm not going to get to the point, I'm not going to say that they're out there going, playing out the string, because 3-6 is not impossible. But, you know, that loss last night, I mean, last week was a season ender. I mean, let's be honest, they had an opportunity to get to 4-5, go into the bye week, and be staring at possibly 5-5, having to play the lonely Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not to say that it would have been a guaranteed win, but the Bucs are come as close as to what, you know, to being a guaranteed win in the NFL right now. They go out there, and again, a game that just typifies the Redskins season. They do some good things, do some dumb things, have some, you know, defense plays well for a half, then completely just falls apart in the second half. Offense shoots itself in the foot, puts up, you know, gains a lot of yards. Defense doesn't get a pass rush, doesn't force any turnovers, and Robert Griffin can't finish. I mean, that's the Redskins. That's been the Redskins in a nutshell for the past 2 years. I mean, it really has. Then I can go far. I can go for basically for the last 20 years, to be honest with you. But I'll leave that just the last 2 years for our younger audiences. So, you know, Griffin comes back, and I thought he played well, considering he'd been gone for about 7 weeks. Missed some throws, including, you know, the fourth down throw to Pierre Garçon, which was an easy throw. I mean, you're an NFL quarterback. You got to make that throw. I mean, Garçon was wide open. But overall, again, I thought he played pretty well. I mean, he certainly played well enough for them to win the game, you know, help put 26 points on the board. But besides what happened on the field, you hear before the game even starts, I mean, first of all, they had the bus crash, the bus crash, which, you know, was scary because they almost went off a cliff. But luckily, nobody was seriously injured. I know Silas Red was inactive with a back injury based off that, but, you know, he'll be fine. But you hear a locker room that could be divided when it comes to Robert Griffin III, and that, you know, people, you know, players in that locker room are tiring of Robert Griffin III to a point to where he's doing the interview and you hear a whole bunch of yelling and they have to actually move the interview. Now, Robert Griffin III, Jay Gruden, even Rob Carlin, local reporter for Comcast Sportsnet, refuted the report. Adam Schefter came on about Wednesday or Thursday, I would say Wednesday, and said, no. That, my sources, this thing really happened, and this is a real issue in that locker room. And again, there's a lot of things I don't like about ESPN. Very few things that I do like about ESPN. I'll just be real about it. But Adam Schefter, Chris Mortensen, they normally don't report not garbage or nonsense. If they report something, it usually is close to being 100% true. And I can only go by their track record. That's all I can go by. And it makes sense because, you know, Griffin has this perception of himself that he's the leader of that team without necessarily earning that title. And there are veterans in that locker room. There are people, there are players in that locker room who probably are like, listen, dude, you haven't been on the field. You haven't been on. First of all, you have a losing record for your career. And second of all, you haven't played. You haven't earned the leadership you haven't earned the title of being called a leader of the team. You really, I mean, you haven't. I mean, it gets to a point where you know, just while you're on that team, you're like, dude, we're tired of it. Like, we're tired of hearing you talk about yourself as a leader of this team. We're tired of hearing you people, even other players, we might even be tired of hearing some of our other teammates say that it's Robert's team. It's nobody's team. It's nobody's team. And from a player, you know, Daniel Snyder owns the team, but from a player standpoint, it's nobody's team. And that's, you know, that's been a major problem with the Redskins for a long time. They don't have any leaders in that locker room. They don't. They have poor leadership or just a lack of overall leadership as a whole. And why it shows? Because the Redskins' dirty laundry gets aired out as soon as it happens. I mean, they're organ. Listen, something happens in New England. It takes weeks, sometimes years, for it to come out. It's like, oh, that happened. Oh, yeah. When was this? This is 2 months ago. They keep everything in house, close to the vest. Belichick gives you nothing in a press conference. Bad if you're a reporter, but great if you're Robert Kraft and the owner of New England Patriots, as owner of New England Patriots, or great for the franchise if you're Tom Brady, and you don't want to be called out by Belichick or another coach. When something happens inside the Redskins locker room, it's known immediately by not only the Washington media, the national media. And that's the perception of this of the Redskins right now. They cannot keep their own they cannot keep their own garbage in house. Period. And until that perception changes, they're gonna be 3-6. They're gonna be 4-12. They're gonna be 5-11, 3-13. Because that's what happens with losing organizations. They point fingers, and it gets out amongst the media. Or they try to use the media to talk about each other. Or they try to blame. I mean, that's what they do. Great organizations. Yeah, everybody fights. Even, I mean, the Spurs, I'm sure, have some fights. Not fist fights, but some disagreements. It stays in house. It stays in house, or they will publicly criticize each other constructively to where you say, "Wow, that's not airing their dirty laundry. That's constructive criticism, or that's great leadership, or that's holding each other accountable." There's no accountability for the Redskins as an organization. None, as an organization. Again, when you hear reports that Daniel Snyder made the decision to start Robert Griffin, because it would have made perfect sense. Again, I had no problem with Griffin playing against Minnesota. I know there was some talk about that he should play following the bye week, extra week. You can't practice during the bye. Yeah, you can watch some more film. So, but if he was healthy, to me, start him, because you need to see you need to see as soon as possible whether or not he could be your quarterback for the future. And I know that there was some talk that he could even play in the Dallas game, but they pushed him back a week. So I was fine with him playing against Minnesota. Get him out there on the road against a legit top 10 defense. Let's see what he can do and move forward. But again, leaks come out of Redskin locker room, out of the Redskin organization, that Daniel Snyder spearheaded Robert Griffin playing against Minnesota. That doesn't happen again with the Green Bays of the world, Indianapolis of the world, Baltimore's of the world. It doesn't. New England's. It doesn't happen with the top organizations, the winning organizations, the winning cultures. Redskins have a culture of chaos. They really do. And it reflects on the field. It absolutely reflects in terms of what goes on the field. Not having enough timeouts, penalties. Again, Jay Gruden has said all the right things in terms of during this press conference for the most part. He holds players accountable, doesn't make excuses. Until this perception of the Redskins changes within the league, then they're going to continue to struggle. course, this week they have a bye before they get Tampa Bay. You know, this week you just try to get some guys healthy. Again, Griffin can't practice in a bye week, but he'll be able to, you know, study some more film, get healthier, and get ready for the stretch run of the NFL season. If you're a resident, again, the goal from moving forward is for Robert Griffin to play out of his mind and to see what Robert Griffin is. That's the goal. Forget about the playoffs. Forget about the division. Again, the players can't think like that, but I'm just being realistic. If you're a fan, even if you're a fan like me, you're just trying to see what you have in Robert Griffin III. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Serial Crim Review. We'll be is your call number in this latest edition of the Serial Crim Review. Was anybody shocked what transpired in Cincinnati on Thursday night? I mean, was anybody really, like, was it really an eye-opener? I mean, the Bengals are the definition of a bully team. They really are. Things are going great. They're on top of you. You know, they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. They face a little adversity. Somebody punches them back in the mouth. They fold and melt like ice cream in July. I mean, seriously, that team. I don't care if they do make the playoffs, and they could. They could easily. Listen, AFC has 11 teams that have a winning record right now, which is something I haven't seen in a long time. So that playoff race is going to be a mad race to finish in terms of those six playoff spots. You figure Denver is a lock. You figure New England is a lock. You figure Indianapolis is a lock. So those are your basic. Those probably are your three locks. Everybody else, though, you just don't know. You just don't know. There are a number of very good teams in the AFC. AFC is just loaded this year from top to bottom. But I'm looking at Cleveland. And again, looking at Cincinnati. I'm not trying to shortchange Cleveland by any stretch of the imagination. That was a big-time performance in prime time, on the road, in a division, against a good football team. So, let me not – Brian Hoyer has played – first of all, Brian Hoyer, you hear some reports that Johnny Manziel is not happy. I don't want to hear about Johnny Manziel not being happy. Sit the bench and shut up. Like, you did this to yourself. You could have easily been the starting quarterback. if not for what transpired off the field easily. It may only last two or three games, but still, they wanted him to be the starter. But so give Brian Hoyer credit for taking advantage of the opportunity, and Hoyer has played great this season. He really has. But Cincinnati, I mean, to lay an egg at home, Andy Dalton throwing passes out of bounds. I'm like, they're talking about the wind. I'm like, the wind is not affecting Brian Hoyer's passes. His passes, his receivers are catching them right in stride. He's throwing passes. You know, Muhammad Sanu's making moves and running five yards passes, you know, past the defender. Brian Hoyer, Andy Dalton throws passes 10, 15 yards over his head. I'm like, geez, is the wind that bad? It's affecting one quarterback. It's not affecting the other. 10 of 33, you know, this is Dalton's, what, fourth year. You would think that he would understand the wind conditions at his home stadium. You would think that, knowing where to throw the ball, how to throw the ball at home, you know, with the familiarity of playing in that stadium. Apparently not. I mean, in terms of the magnitude of the game, how much the game meant, division, that was the worst performance of the season, I feel. I mean, that was the biggest egg you could possibly lay. Pittsburgh losing at home to Tampa Bay is a close second. But again, early in the season, Pittsburgh, that, you know, was still trying to figure some things out. Tampa Bay just got lucky. Bad loss. But this one, you know, November, this is a horrible loss for Cincinnati. A horrible performance. And I know the Cleveland defense is very good. I know it's very good, but don't make them out to be the 85 Bears. I mean, come on. Again, I've said it, you know, when people were screaming about Cincinnati early in the season, oh, they might be a contender. I said a contender could be the best team in the league. Hold the brakes on that. Because I don't trust Marvin Lewis. And to a lesser extent, and I gave it this, I was defending Andy Dalton early in the season, but to a lesser extent, you can't trust, at this point, you can't trust Andy Dalton either. I mean, you can't. But again, that takes nothing away from what Cleveland did. Cleveland, think about Cleveland coming into this year. We were laughing. When we were doing shows in August, talking about the Manziel, that situation, that how much of that circus was, the drafting of Manziel, the split within the organization. Manziel doesn't even matter anymore at this point. Unless, with Hoyer being healthy, Manziel doesn't. Nobody cares about Manziel right now. It's really not about him. It's about the Cleveland defense. They have, you know, how they utilize their running backs. They have three quality running backs. Two of them are making no money, so they can keep this thing together for, you know, years to come. Ben Tate's not going to demand a lot of money on the open market. And they're going to get Josh Gordon back in week 12. I mean, Cleveland is a real force in the AFC. I mean, they have to be paid. Again, I'm not going to say Super Bowl, because I have to, like, we have to see Brian Hoyer in the postseason. But I'm telling you right now, they make the playoffs, I wouldn't want to face them. Not with that defense. Because, I mean, they're built for the playoffs with that defensive running game. And they've played, they really haven't had, outside the Jacksonville game, which I will never understand how in the world they lost to Jacksonville. That's just one of those losses that you just shake your head at. But outside of that performance, Cleveland has either, you know, won every game or been in every game. They played extremely well this season. And Mike Pettine should be given a ton of credit. Matter of fact, he probably would be my coach of the year right now. He really would. Should be given a ton of credit for what he's done with that team. Team is now, they have talent, arguably the best offensive line in football, some talent, some good players on defense. Joe Hayden is a tremendous quarterback. But they also had a culture of losing, which is tough to reverse. Just it's been a great season. And how about the division? How about the division with the AFC North? Everybody having at least a winning record. Now, Baltimore looks like it's falling off the cliff right now. They could possibly go in the wrong direction. Pittsburgh, Cleveland on their way up. Cincinnati kind of in the middle. But everybody in the division having a winning record. And before the season, nobody saw that coming before the season. We are now joined by Roslyn Ross, of course, does work for Yahoo Sports, Yahoo Radio. Has been on the program a number of times. Roslyn, how are you doing this morning?
Hey there, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Roslyn. We can start with, we were just talking about the NFL, so I guess we could start with that. You look at the landscape of the AFC right now, 11 teams over 500, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, New England all heading in, you know, heading like seemingly making a late run. What are your thoughts on how on the AFC right now? Have you ever seen anything like this with this amount of quality teams?
No, we really haven't. And, you know, it's a funny thing to me because maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, most of us thought that the Broncos were the dominant team. You know, I can speak for myself saying that I felt pretty sure that they would end up in the Super Bowl. And, you know, then they have a loss like they just had to New England, and it just turns the whole thing upside down. Same thing with the Steelers. I pretty much thought maybe four weeks ago that the Steelers were done, weren't going to be relevant this year. And now, you know, here they are right at the top of their division, and we know the story about, you know, the questioning of Tom Brady at the beginning of the season. So, you know, not only is the division, the entire conference looking strong, but what's going on within the division is pretty spectacular as well. And it's a funny season for the NFL to me because this seems like a season where almost every game I've felt like I've watched has been very lopsided, particularly on the marquee nights like your Thursday night and Sunday night. Those games have felt really lopsided to me. But then when I look at the standings, I see teams, again, that I had counted out and thought were finished that are now making a push forward, and then teams that look strong at the start of the year. So it's just, you know, it's just what we've come to expect from the NFL. So much parity, and a lot of teams, particularly a very strong AFC, that, you know, could make a point and be, you know, winning the Super Bowl, holding up the trophy at the end of the season.
I completely agree with you on that. I think that what you see is, and I heard somebody say a long time ago that despite the fact that the NFL is only 16 games, that there are at least four or five twists and turns within every NFL season. And I think you see just how fragile these teams are. Like, one bad week can turn into a three-game losing streak. One injury can change the complexion of a season. I mean, look at the Cowboys.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago were riding high. You know, people say, you know, maybe they can get to the Super Bowl. Tony Romo's playing great. Now, all of a sudden, Romo Clinton, again, has back issues. They, you know, don't look as good defensively. You just don't know. I mean, the Saints are playing well now, seem to be heading in the right direction. San Francisco is down. I don't know if we can call any one team a dominant team right now. I think we crown dominant teams too quickly, you know, and I think you just got to just kind of watch and let the games play out. Even, you know, are you surprised by what New England has been able to do in the last couple of weeks? Because they looked done after that Kansas City game on Sunday night or Monday night.
They were done with. And done is a strong statement always for them, but they certainly didn't look like, you know, a major contender. I'm very surprised. I'm very surprised the way that they've been able to turn it around. And all of a sudden seems to be this focus. Brady is getting more comfortable with, you know, the guys that are receiving the ball from him. So, you know, like you said, it's just all of a sudden within 2 weeks, you're looking at a complete change of, you know, perception of, you know, who fans are able to root for and what team can go all the way. Certainly you brought up the Dallas Cowboys as well. And, you know, even bringing in Brandon Whedon, I thought they still had a chance because, the running game has been so strong. And to me, that's really what has been Tony Romo's saving grace as well. Like, they've taken a lot of pressure off of him throwing the ball. But, I mean, gosh, just that one change and – you know, but then I look back at the beginning of the season, and a lot of the teams that they beat were not good. They were not good throwing the ball. Like, their receivers weren't a threat. And what we've learned also over the last few weeks with the Dallas Cowboys is that their secondary is, you know, not
at
all.
No, it's bad.
Yeah,
it's bad.
Really bad. And I don't know that that was, you know, so I think what also happens in the NFL is maybe it really does, and the season is really short, so it feels more pressing than it does in the NBA when teams have to get used to guys and used to strategy on teams. But for the NFL, you know, it takes maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden opposing teams take a look at some film and they figure out, oh, this is what we can do to these guys. And all of a sudden, yeah, two losses and you're looking at a completely different team. 3 losses, 3 wins and you're looking at a completely different team. But I think the season is shortened. You know, they have these very short seasons. Things have to turn around quickly. And when they do, it makes a big, 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 big difference when a team figures out what they can do to you strategically. And that's a lot of what we're seeing as well.
No question about it. Rosalind Ross joining me on the Cyril Quinn Review. Trying to shift gears now to the NBA, Rosalind. NBA season is basically 2 weeks in. What are your thoughts about the Cleveland Cavaliers early on?
Well, you know, and I think I have a piece coming on this. There's something boiling in me that says that says there's a story to be told with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yes.
I thought that story, which came out, you know, which now they're saying is not true.
Which we know is true.
We know absolutely that that's true, right? But, you know, just because we have to be, you know, we got to keep our journalistic integrity and say, you know, they denied that it was true. So they did deny it. But I thought it was a very interesting story in that it is so, you know, it represents the fact that LeBron is no longer in Miami for so many reasons why it's very, you know, it's very obvious from the situation he's in now. First of all, Kyrie Irving is not Mario Chalmers, and he's not Mo Williams for that matter. So, you know, there's not a stand-in sort of figurehead point guard on this team. There is an actual point guard who wants the ball in his hand. Exactly, who wants the ball in his hand and who wants to make decisions on the court to get the ball somewhere so someone can score. And he also can score. And what we know is that LeBron James is very comfortable with the ball in his hands. So, I watched the game last night, and Kyrie sat for several stretches. And I hope that's not going to be the cure-all. Like, we're going to sit our point guard down and let LeBron have the ball like he wants. We've talked so much over the years about how cerebral of a player LeBron James is, even though I believe he leads with his athleticism. But apparently he's a very cerebral player. I think it's about time, especially him being in the league so long, I think this is going to tell us whether or not he really is a guy who can change his game to fit the team. Because he's so talented, there's so much stuff he can do. We've never seen him as a cutter and a slasher and somebody that moves without the ball. But that might be what best serves Cleveland because they have a real point guard. It's just going to be really interesting to see who is the person that's going to have to – you know, we knew all these guys, Love, Irving, and James, were going to have to make adjustments. But it's going to be interesting to me between this Irving and James dynamic to see who's going to be the guy who really has to make the biggest change to his game. It would be suitable for it to be James. I think they cave in because he's the king of the league. But I think there's a story brewing here.
We both are in the same boat with that. Here's the thing. He goes to Miami, and, yes, all of them had to make adjustments to play with each other. But the biggest adjustments that had to be made was the fact that Dwayne Wade had to surrender the reins as the guy, on that team so that he could play Robin to LeBron's Batman. So that was the biggest thing. This situation, to me, is in terms of who has to make the biggest adjustment, who should make the biggest adjustment, it should be 50-50. LeBron, like you said, has to learn how to play with a real point guard, an actual point guard in Kyrie Irving. And also, you know, Deion Waiters and Kyrie Irving have to learn how to play off LeBron and become more, you know, become more playmakers in their own right, expand their games, become better defensively, become, you know, shoot less, so to speak, which is, you know, the development, which is part of become, which is part of them, just their natural development. These are still very young players, both Irvin and Waiters, as we all realize. The story that's brewing to me that you're talking about is, and it is a question that I thought about when I did my NBA preview with my cousin, does LeBron have too much power? And I say that because I say that Yahoo did a piece a couple of weeks ago about basically about LeBron and the power. I know you saw this piece about the Tristan.
Yeah, I did.
You know,
it was
Tristan,
amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It was great, and it didn't get enough credit as far as I'm concerned. Tristan Thompson, he's his agent, basically not his agent, but Tristan Thompson is working, not working, but is a client under LeBron.
Now,
with LeBron's people. LeBron, we know LeBron orchestrated that Kevin Love deal. Okay, that he was not coming. I don't believe that he was coming to Cleveland had that deal not been made. Okay.
No. I agree.
You know, I mean, he has so much power. And it's not a coincidence. Last night, as soon as he starts calling out teammates and talking about guys have to learn, you know, guys have to learn how to, you know, to shake these bad habits, Deion Waiters becomes a sixth man now. That's not a coincidence. Rosalind, I know you saw this. I watched the game too last night. He's on the sideline. He's basically coaching the team. He's standing. Where's David Blatt? He's on the bench, standing up, yelling the guy. Where's David? Where's the coach? This is great. I mean, I understand it's leadership, but I need, you know, you have to have a coach.
Absolutely.
So I just wonder if you can win a championship with that guy just being is that larger in life and just being over everybody. Like I'm thinking of championship franchises, and that's probably the part of the reason why he left Miami as well too. Pat Riley wouldn't allow that. It was Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, then LeBron. You know, even with the Lakers in all those years, it was Phil Jackson, Jerry West, then Shaq and Kobe, Jerry Buss. With all the great teams, it's a pecking order of organization, coach, great player, or organization, great player, coach. But no, I don't know if you can win a championship with one guy just basically pulling the strings and calling the shots. We're going to see how it plays out, but that's going to be, you know, again, nobody's out for whatever reason, nobody's talking about this, but I think he has too much power.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, and I think the thing that makes that very challenging to do, to your point, is, you know, the GM and the coach still do have a great interest in, their interest is in winning. You know, so they don't yield to any part, like they're not out there playing. So at any point, they're not having to yield to some personal desire they have. The personal desire they have is to win. LeBron James, as an individual who's part of that team, can't have that type of power because at some point we're expecting him to be ridiculously responsible with his own desires. Like, I'm going to push those to the back, and I understand that for this to work, I may have to make this change. I don't see many people that can do that. That's why you have to have that structure in place, because if Kobe felt like he had to go around and that he could go around and do every single thing he wanted to do to serve him, and, oh, by the way, hopefully they win as a result of it, that's not a recipe for winning. So I agree with you 100%. And that piece, you know, it's kind of, I don't even know how I saw it, and in, you know, I saw a couple of other people bump into that article on Twitter, but nobody is, you're right, no one is really talking about it. And I thought some very good points were also made about the fact that, you know, the same people, you keep running into the same people in this league. And I would have a hard time believing that this love, this, you know, foreboding love that it seems that every single person has for LeBron James is actually very authentic. So at some point, when his skills diminish even slightly, or when his star isn't as bright, you know, he's probably going to start taking back a little of the bumps and bruises that he gave out to people on his, you know, as he was building his master plan at various stages. And this trip back home to Cleveland is certainly part of that master plan, and everything he had to do to get here, and the things he's doing, to your point, now that his agency is based in Cleveland, and even though he's not on, you know, he's not being represented, but the things that he's doing to help those guys get other guys that he knows, it's just a ridiculous amount of power. And you're right, I think it's going to have to be a compromise on both ends. And I definitely want to make sure I say this, because the point you made about what he had to do, what Dwayne Wade was willing to do, and you talked about Kyrie and Waiters being younger. And I think that is a big, 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 huge point, because those guys, I don't think they take it for granted necessarily, but there's definitely a part of them that feels probably like, we're still young. Like, before you got here, like, we were trying to gel together, and we're still young guys, and we were getting better each season. And they probably have a different mindset than of Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh, especially Chris Bosh, who had never won a championship, who may have felt a little bit more of the pressure of being later in his career. Those young guys don't feel that. So there's still a part of them that's like, no, I'm doing fine, and you're not going to get here and tell me what to do, bully me around. We're going to try to figure this thing out together. I'm not just going to automatically defer to you in the way that you've experienced before. I think that's a big part of the story as well. These guys are younger, and they still feel like they have time to get it together, and they don't have to hurry up and, you know, hang on his every word, because they've got time to do it. So, I don't think this is a championship team. You know, they'll be there at some point at the end. I'm just not sure this is a championship team for all of the reasons we've discussed, but mainly because I think he does have too much power, and, he's got to be responsible with it, and I don't know that anybody, any individual, could be expected to be that responsible with this much power.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you look at, it's really almost not a comparison when you look at him entering Miami versus him entering Cleveland in terms of, you know, Dwayne Wade was a legit top five player when they hooked up. Chris Bosh was a legit all-star. And Chris Bosh, let me tell you something, Chris Bosh gets ripped to pieces unfairly.
Yeah.
Chris Bosh, listen, defensively, there's no comparison between Chris Bosh and Kevin Love. It's not like they've taken Kevin Love off the floor at times. They're taking Kevin Love off the floor at times because he's so bad defensively. So when I look at the structure that was in place in Miami with Pat Riley, Spoelstra had been there for a couple of years. They had a championship culture. They had won a championship before LeBron got there. And you look at him going to Cleveland. First of all, he's not as good a player as he was 4 years ago. Now, I'm not going to go the Bill Simmons route and say that he slipped to a point to where it's noticeable. But he's entering that point to where he's going to start declining. It's close. It's very close. So not as good as he was in 2010. You go to an organization that does not know how to win in Cleveland. You have a new coach that doesn't know how to coach NBA basketball. He's a European coach. Okay, he's a rookie coach. You have young players who just flat out don't know how to win. And then on top of it, they are a bad, bad defensive team. Miami, even that first year when they struggled, was a great defensive team. They were a great defensive team. So, and the question is, can he compensate for all those holes? Can he cover all those holes as great as he is? So in Miami, he didn't have to cover all those holes especially in the beginning. This situation is a little bit different. I think we're going to look back and I think that we're going to be saying that he underestimated how tough it was going to be to win. I think we're going to be looking back and saying that he didn't quite know what he was getting into. That, you know, he allowed the publicity and all the goodwill that he would receive in coming back to Cleveland, and all the business, the businesses as well, and that his brand and all that he allowed that to possibly get in the way of thinking of how hard it would be to win. Well, he could have stayed in Miami for one more year and then waited for other teams to develop with better situations, better teams. But, you know, we'll
see. I agree,
the other thing is he can't leave.
Like,
he has to stay there.
So there's no running from this situation. So, you know, I agree. We're going to look back and say maybe this wasn't well thought out, and it may turn out to be, you know, and I don't want to say that they just can't do it, But it may turn out to be, if LeBron has to retire with two rings because he can't leave there, it may turn out to be the big reason why he, you know, that we're discussing that he only got two rings in his career, because he made that singular decision to go back, and he did underestimate what it would take to be able to win. I think you're right.
What are your thoughts early on the play of two guys who were coming off injuries? First, Kobe Bryant, and second, Rajon Rondo.
Kobe Bryant looks amazing. I mean, congrats to you and your Lakers for the way he made a triumphant return. The problem is,
don't say congrats to Kobe, not to the Lakers.
I know he's gonna. The thing is, he's gonna spontaneously combust out of anger on the court. I take that back. I don't even know if he's gonna get that mad about it, because it's you guys don't have the pieces. You know, I think I think we'd be worried about him really getting upset if you guys had the pieces. You don't have the pieces, but he looks amazing. Rajon Rondo just got his triple-double, but then he didn't play in the fourth quarter all last night. So I didn't see that game, but I saw that report. So I wonder what that's about, especially when they lost Marcus Smart. So, I think that it's pretty awesome, which to me probably shines a little bit of a light on Derrick Rose and his inability to return triumphantly from double injury. I think that's a conversation people need to have.
I'm glad you bring that up. Chicago Sun-Times ripped him earlier this week on a piece that they did about, you know, will he ever be healthy? Will he ever be the player that they thought that he could be? He gets hurt. Okay, I'm watching the Cleveland game last Friday, Cleveland-Chicago. So he leaves the game with an ankle injury. In the same game, maybe even in the same quarter, I believe it was the second quarter, Taj Gibson hurts his ankle and was on the floor, you thought it was more serious than it turned out to be. Taj Gibson returns to the game. Derrick Rose is nowhere to be found. And I'm like,
no. And
then you have a situation where they hold him out, even though there were reports that, you know, he could play, they hold him out. I think you just got to cut him loose as far as just let him play. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. Just coddling, just holding him out one game, letting him play the next. I don't think this plan is going to work for Chicago as far as if they want to try to win a championship. I mean, they have to find out, can this guy play four games in 5 nights? Can he possibly play back-to-backs? Can he play a NBA season? I mean, they have to find out about Derrick Rose. Like, you can't sit up here and just go back and forth. Just go back and forth with trying to coddle Derrick Rose and trying to, you know, save him for the postseason. I mean, like minutes restriction. You gotta find out. You gotta find out about him. You absolutely have to find out about him, because, again, if I'm Chicago, you know, I'm similar to, you know, the Lakers with all, not the Lakers, but the Redskins with RG3. I had to find out if this guy is going to be our franchise. Is this guy going to be our franchise player moving forward? I'm waiting for Roslyn, bad connection there with Roslyn, so she can call back. But you got her thoughts on Kobe Bryant. You got thoughts on LeBron James. And again, I think LeBron, I think he has too much power. I really do. I think he has too much power within that organization. I mean, that organization, again, the first time he was there, and I know that they didn't have the likes of a Kevin Love or a Kyrie Irving the first time, but it did not produce a championship the first time he was there when he had the amount of power he had. And right now he has 10 times as much power as he had in his first stint with Cleveland. The first stint, he had basically his entourage traveling and, you know, that in terms of that nature. This one, you know, he's picking players. And you have Mike Miller on the team, James Jones. Those are LeBron James's. Those are his guys. He wants Ray Allen. And again, I don't think you could win a championship with one player being that dominant of a figure within your organization, off the court as well. I don't think you win a championship that way. We'll see what happens. Again, Sacramento playing well. Despite the loss, Phoenix is playing well. Not too much out of the rookies. Jabari Parker had 18 last night. Wiggins had played well against in a loss against against Brooklyn. Maybe too early to see what the, judge what the rookies are doing. We'll see once you get like a couple months in terms of what they're really all about. But it's going to be a very interesting year in the NBA. It's going to be a very exciting year in the NBA. A lot of storylines. Kobe Bryant, Rajon Rondo, could they both be traded? Could Kobe force a trade or waive his no-trade clause? Rajon Rondo, who's almost averaging a triple-double, by the way. He's averaging 9-12, 9-13-9. Played great this year. We know they're going to move him. They have a lot of pieces. There are going to be some teams that will want him. Houston certainly would be one of the teams that could possibly want him. We have a number of teams that want him. Golden State's playing great. Golden State plays Houston at night. I'm not a believer in Houston. They haven't beaten anybody. That San Antonio game tells me nothing because San Antonio took the night off. No Duncan, no Ginobili, and they just messily took the night off. San Antonio didn't come play that game at all. It's basically saying our players not playing, so just going to rest, run our plays, and move on to the next game. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Zero Quinn Review. Thanks to Rosalind Ross for joining us. I will see you next time. Have a great, great weekend.